Accession number 11316, row 4.
So John Figgis, row 4.
This question continued to come up, and obviously was of concern to the post-47 government, and again they asked for clarification, and I think it was then that I produced the thorough investigation report, which is available in the Public Record Office.
Now, if we can go on to the fall of China to the communists in 49, how much impact did that have on the Japanese?
I can't really say that it had much impact as far as I personally was concerned. What really worried them was much later, when the Americans, when the British recognized communist China, and the Americans did not. And you had the situation where the Americans continued to recognize Chiang Kai-shek as the ruler of China, while the British were recognizing Peking. And this was a very difficult situation for the Japanese to cope with. But of course this was not a military matter, it was a very sensitive political matter, and it went on for a very long time. And I was told by Japanese friends of mine in the Foreign Office that the greatest nightmare of any American, of any Japanese ambassador in Washington, that it was that he might wake up one day and hear that the United States had recognized communist China, because it would then leave the Japanese out on a limb recognizing nationalist China. And this was a very difficult situation for them, because of course they were doing a great deal of business with Taiwan. You have to remember that the Taiwanese were Japanese educated until 1945. From 1895, so the Japanese, the Taiwanese were in almost every respect Japanese in outlook. And this situation, which eventually happened after President Nixon recognized communist China, left the Japanese in a very, very difficult, awkward situation. Happily, it's been resolved, but at the time it was a cause of great concern. 1949 and 50, those times were not a worry, except of course that it led to the Korean War. And the Korean War was turned out, it was frightening to begin with. The outbreak of the Korean War was frightening for all concerned, but it turned out to have been a boost for the Japanese, because with the involvement of the United Nations forces in Korea, which means largely the Americans, they absolutely needed Japan as a base. So they had to encourage the recreation of Japanese industry, or such industry as is necessary to support their war effort in Korea. And that meant a tremendous boost to Japan. In fact, one could say that that was what started the Japanese, restarted them on the road to industrial success, was the need of the Americans for America, for Japanese support in the Korean War, 1950.
Was the orthodox account of the reasons for the outbreak of the Korean War in 1950 accepted at the time by everybody in Japan, that the North had attacked the South?
Probably not by the Communist Party, but by everybody else. To my mind, there was absolutely no doubt. We were receiving, of course I was closely working with the United States intelligence people on a daily basis, and we were receiving frequently reports that the North Koreans were ready to attack the South for several months beforehand. Almost every other week there was a threat of a North Korean attack. And I remember very clearly that it was the 24th of June, and I was coming back from the seaside, and I had a radio in my car and switched it on, and then the very attack that we had been forecasting, more or less forecasting, the very attack of the North Koreans across the 38th parallel had happened. And I could never understand that anyone could doubt that account, since the North Koreans were in Seoul within a few hours. So the idea that the attack was provoked by an incursion from the south seemed to me that it couldn't possibly hold water.
What about the question of British involvement in the war? Did you have any contact with that?
Yes, indeed, I did.
Can you tell me whether or not there was any doubt as to whether the British would intervene as part of the United Nations forces?
I suppose it was regarded by all of us in the embassy as a foregone conclusion that the British forces in the area in Hong Kong would be committed to this as a beginning, since it was a United Nations affair. We had supported the idea of a United Nations counter against the North Korea, the communist attack. We weren't prepared for it. The sad thing, of course, was that the people who came up from Hong Kong had only summer equipment, and it was desperate in the early winter of Korea, where the temperature is very bad, very cold and bitter. So they were ill-equipped to compete, to fight in those conditions. But I don't think there was any doubt in the minds of any of us that Britain would come in. Remember that at that stage we were still very much close allies of the United States, in spite of the fact that we had disappointed them by recognizing Peking. And those of us who were there in Tokyo with the Americans, certainly never saw any sign of disagreement or anything except close comradeship.
At what stage did you in the embassy in Tokyo anticipate that China would come into the Korean War in the way in which you did?
When you say the embassy, I mean it was an embassy, but we weren't independent. We were still under General MacArthur. So it was not a British embassy. It was a British mission, the United Kingdom liaison mission. We, of course, were seeing the diplomatic exchanges, and we knew what Mr. Panikkar had said. The Indian ambassador in Peking had said the Chinese will come in. Well, you either believe it or you don't believe it. I don't know what the official view was. It would be difficult to know whether to believe it or not believe it. I think it probably opinion in the Foreign Office was divided. Some people thought we have to really believe this, and others might have said, well, we don't know. Panikkar is a communist, so it may be just to frighten. But he was right. And of course, the immediate results were disastrous for the Americans. Terrible casualties when the Chinese came in. They caught the American 2nd Division in their vehicles on the road and simply slaughtered them. It was a terrible shock for the Americans, the advent of the Chinese, and their success. I mean, these were just peasants with rifles and tennis shoes, and they overwhelmed the American army with all its modern equipment. Because by that stage, the Americans, of course, not only the Americans, but they were soft. hadn't had any proper training. They were caught with their pants down.
There has been quite a bit of military criticism of that particular, of those particular American forces as compared with the American forces in Northwest Europe, as in the Northwest European campaign of 44-45.
Oh yes, but I think that's not fair, because 5 years had elapsed, 5 years of peace, and any army in 5 years with nothing to do is going to go soft. Unless it's really trained for some specific job. I think it was a noble gesture for the Americans to go in there, but they weren't trained forces. They were the first ones thrown in were just occupation troops who hadn't had any serious battle training. It was a very brave, courageous thing to do, and some people would say foolhardy. But of course they didn't think that they were going to meet the Chinese. They were only going to be against the Koreans to begin with.
One of the things that caused considerable controversy at that stage of the Korean War was the belief that nuclear weapons should be used to turn the tide in Korea. Do you remember that issue?
I remember it very vividly, because of course that was the issue that ended up sadly with General MacArthur's dismissal. The view of some of General MacArthur and some of his staff was that the atom bomb could be used to relieve the pressure on the really terrible pressure on the American army. But that view was not shared by, I think, the United States General Staff in Washington, and certainly not by our own General Staff, who were horrified at the thought. But if I could just, if it's right to insert a personal view, MacArthur had become rather sure of himself, and he really had made one of the most brilliant coups in military history with the landing at Incheon, whereby the North Korean army was cut off and virtually destroyed, because it had to go back. The United States had able to cut off their retreat, and hardly anything of the North Korean army got back. They lost all their equipment, they straggled back. There was nothing, virtually nothing left. But I think that went to his head, together with all the other successes. And it's a terrible thing, but of course it applies to lots of other people too. It's a human failing that they tend to become convinced of their omniscience. And this happened, I think, with General MacArthur, and he deliberately replaced his staff with individuals who were ready to be compliant, and he got rid of anyone who would disagree, so that he'd got in the end a group of people around him who were sycophantic, and that brought about sadly his end, which was a terrible thing, because instead of halting on a defensive line, not exactly not on the 38th parallel, because that is not defendable, but on a line somewhere, a really good defense line, running there along around the 38th parallel, and held that, the outcome could have been quite different. It wouldn't have brought in the Chinese, and it would have established South Korea firmly, and eventually might even have brought about a possibility, who knows, of reunification with North Korea. But leaving that aside, the great mistake was to advance into North Korea, carried away by the success and the belief in his omniscience and success, to move right up to the Yalu River, which is the frontier with China, and then to see his army destroyed by these hordes of Chinese. And then his whole reputation, which had been so great and so absolutely unshakable, threatened with complete loss.
But I suppose the temptation to try to destroy the North Korean regime so that a similar situation might not occur again in the future must have been very powerful.
But that wasn't his remit. Wasn't his remit at all to destroy the North Korean regime. The remit of the United Nations forces was to restore the status quo, defeat the challenge from the communist North Korea, and restore the status quo. And he exceeded his instructions and his of the United Nations by sweeping up, and especially, of course, the army, the troops that he had weren't really prepared for it. The winter was terrible. They died of frostbite. And then these Chinese came in. So I think then, in desperation, because he was a wise and very astute man, I think a great man, but his wisdom must have gone, because then he fell back on the idea, probably panic-stricken with the thought of this, of responsibility, and his whole reputation gone with the destruction of these forces. Then he fell back on the idea, I'm just speculating now, of the of using the atom bomb, which was now we can see was ridiculous anyway, because what's the use of dropping atom bombs in mountains? But with that apart, it horrified the chiefs of staff in Washington. It absolutely shook our chiefs of staff, and the net result was that President Truman, after remonstrating and being obstructed by MacArthur, sacked him. And the method of his sacking was just too terrible, because he heard it on the radio first.
One of the other big issues in the Korean War was the alleged use of germ warfare by the United Nations side. Did you have any views about that at the time?
Never heard anything about the use of germ warfare, or nor do I believe that there was any use of germ warfare. What I think there was a grave misunderstanding, a failure a tendency to underrate the opposition. I remember people saying, oh, well, the North Koreans can't fly jet fighters. They're too unsophisticated, so we don't have to worry. Because for a long time, weeks and months, the Americans were able to fly bombers into North Korea with no apprehension at all. But then they became armed with MiGs and trained, no doubt, by the Soviet Union. And then we heard one day of a whole flight of 20-something American bombers being shot down by Korean MiGs. So I think the conclusion of the Korean War in March 1953 was a very good thing. And that marked my departure. Shortly after that, I left and came back to the War Office, where I was military attaché. I came back to the War Office, where I was in charge of MI2. I told you the MI2 intelligence, as MI2 colonel for 3 years.
Type to be in office. Did you not go through that?
That they got the record.